Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Because you got two imperfect people living side by side, day in and day out, and inevitably needs are not going to be met, feelings are going to get hurt. Because if you have active resentments in your heart, it's hard to go on dates with your partner, it's hard to have sex with your partner, it's hard to feel close with your partner. So often our partner's hurtful behavior is more about mindlessness than malice.
Dear young married couple, do you want to know how to talk about that thing that always blows up every single time you try to talk about it?
Maybe you've built a lot of resentment up about this thing because every time you try to talk about it, it either gets avoided or it blows up. We're here to talk to you today about how to have that conversation.
Yes, and we're going to get a tool that you can use with your spouse to have a very productive and, I would say, a conversation that you both feel understood.
Yes.
And it's going to be really beneficial for you.
So we have with us a special guest, Dr. Wyatt Fisher, and he is a licensed psychologist from Colorado. He has both a master's and doctorate in clinical psychology, and he speaks and has a practice and focuses on couples. And so he's going to bring his tool today to walk us through how to have this conversation in a way that both of you feel heard and understood.
And before we get into the interview, we just want to make you aware that this coming Friday is our monthly live date night, and we're going to be going deep and talking about how your childhood affects your current relationships.
It'll be at 5 p.m. Pacific time. It's live for 90 minutes. And if you can't make it, you can always watch the replay. So we'll put that link in the show notes. And we really hope you'll join us. Sometimes date night is light and airy and we're talking about sex or, you know, fun things around the holidays. But we decided we're going to get really deep with you this time and talk about how your childhood impacts your relationship. So come join us. Welcome, Dr. Wyatt Fisher, to the podcast. We're so glad that you're with us today.
Welcome.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah. So you deal with a lot of couples in your practice and in your retreats, your conferences. And so one of the things that you deal with quite a bit is resentment.
Absolutely. I always tell couples, you know, resentment is part and parcel to long-term relationships because you got two imperfect people living side by side, day in and day out. And inevitably, needs are not going to be met. Feelings are going to get hurt. But we're not trained on what do you do with that. And yep. So we either stuff it or we become passive aggressive or we escalate, and none of that's healthy. And so a lot of times they're left unresolved and then everything else tends to fall apart when there's active resentments in a relationship.
So just to get clear, what is resentment? So people know, like, oh, this is resentment. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, that's a good question. I define resentment as any ongoing negative feelings you have in your heart toward your partner. And it can be from a pattern of behavior they do, or it can be from an isolated event that happened.
Mm-hmm.
But as if you check your heart, you're looking for, do I hold any negative ongoing feelings in my heart toward them for a pattern or an incident?
So what's a tangible way that someone can know they have resentment? Like if they're listening and they're like, I don't know, is that resentment or not?
You usually can tell by thinking about how much or how thick or how large your wall is in your heart toward your partner.
Okay.
Because a lot of times if we have resentment, we'll build walls to retreat and to protect ourselves. And so it's really a matter of how open and vulnerable and close do you feel with your partner. If you have active resentments, you probably have some barriers to that closeness, and that can tell you, I might have some resentments I need to work on.
Yeah.
Very good. And I love how you said it's either a pattern or an event. So a lot of clients that I've worked with can definitely point their finger back to events, but patterns can just be just as resentful.
Oh, yeah.
Like what would that look like in a marriage? Like, I guess it could be the socks on the floor that you've asked 40 times to not do that, right? Like put it in a hamper. It's right there.
Uh-huh. Yeah, patterns, I think, are actually even more deadly sometimes compared to events. because the patterns are things we live with day in and day out.
Right. It's
consistent action from our partner or inaction that hurts our feelings or offends us or our needs aren't being met. So one common one might be, let's say your need is emotional intimacy and you've brought it up a lot to your partner and they just refuse to try to nurture that for you. And you try to have those types of conversations and they just don't go there. They won't go there. And that builds a resentment. You know, that's a pattern that my partner won't tend to my emotional needs.
Mm-hmm.
So that might be an example for somebody.
Right.
So the lack of emotional intimacy is one. What are some other common reasons that people would build resentment toward their partner?
Yeah, another common one can be sexual, a lack of sexual intimacy.
Mm-hmm.
So I, you know, same thing. I bring up my desire for sexual contact. It falls on deaf ears. My partner tells me to get over it. You know, no matter what I say, they won't, they're not open to physical connection. So now I have some resentment because now that makes me feel unloved. You know, so that can happen. Another one might be uneven workload. And so if you feel like overall you're hustling more to move life together compared to your partner, to move life forward rather, then that can build resentment.
Yes.
Parenting can be a big one. Like, why do I have to be the bad cop all the time and you're the good cop? You know, that kind of thing. In-laws, why do you take your parents' side instead of my side? That always happens. Money, you know, why are you always spending? I thought we were saving. You know, you said you were going to start reducing your spending, but you're not. I can't trust you. This is a pattern. So all sorts of stuff, obviously, can come into marriage, and they're often patterns.
Yeah.
Wow. Yep. So now that everybody's listening and has identified their resentment in their heart, how do we go about working on this ongoing negative feeling that I have?
Yeah. I think the first step is recognizing how important it is to address resentments, because if resentments are not addressed, everything else starts to break down. Because if you have active resentments in your heart, it's hard to go on dates with your partner. It's hard to have sex with your partner. It's hard to feel close with your partner.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, when I see couples in my practice, the very first thing I do with all couples is I have them make a list of their top resentments.
Nice.
We start there. And then I teach them a tool called the Reunite Tool. And then I help them work through one resentment at a time while using the tool. So we're killing two birds with one stone. They're learning a tool while working through the resentments at the same time.
Nice. Okay. So this Reunite Tool, I'm sure everyone listening is like, I want that tool. Can you share that tool with us? Walk us through it.
Okay. Yeah. And you can find the tool online. If you just type in Reunite Tool and search Reunite Tool, it should come up at the top. So the Reunite Tool is a method to help couples stay emotionally safe to talk through these resentments, because a lot of times what happens is you get gridlocked. Mm-hmm. You know, there's so much tension around this topic. We can't even talk about it without fighting. And so now we don't talk about it. And now the resentment just gets entrenched.
Right.
And then bitterness starts to take hold.
Mm-hmm.
So the Reunite Tool, so there's complainer steps and then listener steps.
Okay. Complainer. I love
that.
We say speaker listener, but complainer makes it, paints a very vivid picture for us of what's going on here.
Yeah. And that doesn't mean you're a complainer. It just means you're going to go first talking about the resentment you have.
Okay.
That's what that means. And so the first thing you do, let's say you pick a topic and let's say it's money. Mm-hmm. And the first thing you do is it's just a little pre-step. You have to tell your partner what it's about. Just in like two or three words, without saying you, without going into the full complaint, just so they can put it in context as you go through the rest of the steps. So that's a pre-step. So let's say if it is money, you would say something like, this is about money and me feeling voiceless with our money.
Mm.
So that'd be the pre-step. So you're not
No use. Can't use the word you in
not
the pre-step.
Not in the pre-step, no. Because you don't want to start off as an attack or a criticism. Mm-hmm. You're just doing a little pre-step, a little teaser, so the other person knows, like, oh, okay, I know what this is about.
Gotcha.
Okay. Yep.
Okay.
Then step one, the official step one for the complainer steps, is you're going to start with the good. You're going to start with, how has your partner actually improved in making you feel like you have more of a voice with money over the last 6 to 12 months? So you're going to search high and low, search for any little piece of progress.
So wait, hold on. I'm going to be the typical client of yours.
Yes.
I can't think of one thing he has done in the last 12 months to make any improvement in this area.
Yeah, that happens. And that's why you're complaining about it, right? That's why it's a resentment.
Right.
However, if you really search, you know, most people can find some glimmer of progress. It's not where they want it to be. That's why it's still a resentment.
It's just that wall is so big and so thick, like you said, that they can't see that good thing that they're actually maybe trying to do.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. And a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down. And so if you can start with highlighting any progress your partner has made, it's in your best interest because it's going to help them be more open to your complaint. Mm.
Yeah.
And if you don't highlight their progress, it's going to be one of the first things out of their mouth with defensiveness is how
that's good. Yeah. And even if they have maybe kind of regressed since then, maybe rewinding back to a time when they did well and highlighting that as a piece of progress, right? Like, remember the time when you did blah, blah, blah? That felt so reassuring to me.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. Any type of good that you can highlight in the very area you want to complain about.
Nice.
So it can't be a random good thing. It can't be like a random progress. It has to be specific to the resentment you're trying to address.
That's good. Mm. Yeah. I like it. So that's step one for the complainer.
Correct. So there's four steps for the complainer.
Okay.
Okay. That's step one. Step two is benefit of the doubt.
Okay.
So often our partner's hurtful behavior is more about mindlessness than malice. Mm-hmm. Not always. Maybe sometimes they are being malicious, but most of the time it's mindlessness. They're not waking up with the intent of, I can't wait to hurt you today, right? That's usually not what's going on. So this one has two parts, number two, and this is all about benefit of the doubt. So the first part is you're going to look to your partner's past. So what did they go through growing up and before they met you that may have influenced them to have this kind of behavior that hurts you? And so this is like a hypothesis, you know, this is more of an art than a science. Yep. And so you're just kind of trying to make a guess here. Like, you know, it makes sense that you went through X, Y, and Z growing up and how that may have influenced you to have this kind of behavior.
Mm. Yeah. It's empathy, right? You're just putting yourself in their shoes and going, you're not crazy. You make sense.
Yeah. There's a reason you're like this and this might be the reason. It makes sense. You know, if this is, you know, the reason why, or maybe this contributed. But then you're going to also ask your partner to make sure. You're like, is that correct? Anything else you think that you may have gone through that may have influenced this tendency? Mm. So that your partner can speak into it.
Nice.
Yeah. I like that.
That's good. Yeah.
So for example, they may, on the money topic, they may say, well, you know, growing up, my dad always controlled all the money and it was never a shared topic between my parents. And so that may have rubbed off on me.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
So that could be an example.
That's good. Mm. Yeah. Yep. So will the complainer go through all four steps before the listener does their steps? Okay.
Yes, that's right.
Okay.
So when you're going through the complainer steps, the listener only speaks when spoken to.
Okay. That's a good rule. Okay.
Yes. and that's an example of when they're spoken to, where you would say, is that correct? Or is there anything else from your past?
Mm-hmm.
Good, okay. Yeah. Yeah.
So when they're asked a question specifically. Okay.
Correct. Yeah. That's a better way to put it.
Okay.
Yeah. So the next part, number two, is their circumstances. So then you're going to think about, you know, when they're going through certain circumstances, and this has nothing to do with me yet as their partner, but when they go through different circumstances, does that behavior that hurts me, does it get worse?
Mm.
And so, for example, let's say when they're really stressed at work, their behavior of, you know, financially gets worse, or when we're going through a recession, their behavior financially gets worse. Mm-hmm. Whatever it is, you want to try to acknowledge. And again, this is just your best guess. It's a hypothesis, but you want to acknowledge it, like, hey, it makes sense, you know, with the current economy that you would want to have a tighter grip on the finances,
you know, the holidays,
or the holidays,
and the needs and the gifting. And so makes it's really sense.
Acknowledging the fear kind of underlaying the behavior.
Yeah. Different circumstances that may be fueling their behavior. Mm. And then likewise, you ask them, like, what do you think? Is that correct? Or do you think there's any other circumstances?
It's good.
So then they can speak into it right there.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's number two. Number three is your part. So this also has two pieces. So the first piece to number three is, what do you do that may influence your partner to respond in the way that hurts your feelings? Okay. Yep. So if we're going with the example, and I feel voiceless with money, maybe it's because this hypothetical, but one example could be, I want to acknowledge that, you know, when you do bring up purchases you want to make, I have a tendency to always say no. And so I could see how that would make you not want to consult. And so you're trying to acknowledge, what do you do that probably influences your partner to behave in the way that hurts you?
Yeah. How do you make the problem worse?
Correct. Yeah. And then you're going to ask your partner again. So it's another checking in, like, is that correct? Is there anything else that I do that influences that behavior?
That's good.
Yep. That's really good.
Yeah.
So do you find, before we get to the last step for the complainer, that the listener is able to sit through all of this speaking and just kind of answer those couple of questions and be okay to not speak yet?
Usually they do okay because you keep checking in with them.
Okay.
Yep. And so that's where they have a release. And so you check in about their past. They have a release there to speak into it. You check in on their circumstances so they can speak to it.
Okay.
You check in on how you've contributed. They can speak to it.
Okay.
So they're having multiple opportunities to speak into what you're saying.
So they're not just answering yes or no, but if it isn't quite right, or that's not all, they could elaborate and be like, absolutely, well, it's more like this.
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. That's right. Yep.
Okay. Good.
Then the next part of number three is your past. And so this is where you think about, okay, so in our marriage, I'm feeling voiceless around finances, if that's what the topic is. So then you're going to think about, does that feeling of being voiceless remind me of anything in my past where I felt voiceless before? And this can go two directions. Either it stirs up a wound, like, oh, I was voiceless a lot growing up and I hated it, and so it's stirring that wound up. Or it's a value violated. I was never voiceless growing up, and my voice always mattered. And so it feels like it violates that value.
That's good.
That's really good.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, when like you can, that. And sometimes there's no connections. And so there's no like requirement that it's connected to our past, but a lot of times it is.
Probably more often than we realize.
That's right. That's right. And so if you can make that connection, what that communicates to your partner is, this is not all you. I acknowledge I'm bringing a sensitivity to this topic because of X, Y, and Z in my past.
Right.
Yeah.
It's really good.
It's really, you know, it's really helpful too, is oftentimes when people do have a complaint, they just throw it out there and there's no cost to complaining. Right. But with this tool, boy, there's a cost to it. Like, that person that is going to complain actually has to go through some work, because that is not an easy road.
Yeah.
No.
That's so right. It'd be very difficult to be a nag here. Yeah. Like, I got another complaint. Okay, I got some time. Go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah. You have to be super thoughtful about it, going through these steps. You're not just like helter-skelter throwing complaints out there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And sometimes you have to educate people on how it's in their best interest. Because if you are the one wanting to say a complaint, what do you want? You want your partner to respond well. You want them to be open. You want them to be teachable. And that's not going to happen if you just lead off with the complaint.
That's right.
Right?
Yeah.
So if you slow it down and follow these steps, it's harder. It's going to take some delayed gratification and some impulse control. But by doing so, you're going to get in the response is going to be much more what you want.
That's right.
You're going to, I think both partners walk away with so much more understanding of the situation, and there's empathy gained. I could see how so many of the walls would, at least if they didn't disappear, they would definitely drop a little bit.
That's right. That's right.
That's very good.
Yeah.
Well, take us to step four for the complainer.
Yeah. So far we've pointed out how they've gotten better, how it's not all their fault because of their past and their circumstances, how we've contributed, and how it might be tapping into something from our past. And those three are so critical, because if you just start with number four, which is the complaint, if you just start with the complaint, most likely your partner is going to point out how they've gotten better, how it's not all their fault, and how it's actually your fault.
So you take all those things off the table when you cover them first.
That's right.
Then you can get to your complaint.
Exactly. It's a preemptive move. And so it's very savvy, because now your partner has nothing to get defensive with. They don't have to. You've done it for them. You've acknowledged all these parts and pieces. That's hopefully lowering their defense wall, so that then they're more open to hearing number four, which is the complaint.
Right. And it's not manipulation because this is you. It's cooperation. It's you getting on the same team and cooperating together.
Right. Yeah.
Help me help you.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So number four is the complaint. So the structure of the complaint is overall, there's a pattern of X. If it's a pattern we're talking about, it makes me feel Y and it taps into my core need for Z.
Hmm.
And you can't say you always or never.
Okay.
Got it. No superlatives.
Yes. Yeah. That's so good. it makes it very succinct.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes when people go into complaints, it can be very long-winded or convoluted and kind of fuzzy, and it's easy to get lost in the translation of what's really being said.
Mm-hmm.
So that format tends to help people get really focused in, like, okay, overall there's a pattern of X, makes me feel Y, and it taps into my core need for Z.
That's really good.
I like that.
It's a good template.
Yeah. What does this produce in the couple generally when you walk through all of this with them?
It creates lots of shifts. I think just hearing all the different variables, you know, going through all those complainer steps, that in and of itself is so illuminating for a lot of people. Mm. And they'll say things like, whoa, I never realized that taps into this part, or there's this element going on here. And even the complaint itself, even though it's a simple template at the end, even that can be revolutionary for people, because like, oh, I didn't realize it makes you feel like that, or it taps into that core need for you.
Yep.
And when you have all those data points, it just shifts your mindset of when you're the listener compared to all you're hearing is this pointed criticism.
Yeah.
Right.
You can receive their influence a lot more readily with this template.
And you see it much broader, right? You see all the broad strokes going on.
Yeah.
It's not just this one simple thing happening.
It's perspective.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how do you transition from the complainer to, okay, now it's the listener's turn to go through their steps?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Usually, you know, I have them looking at that article, the Reunite tool in the table. There's a table in that article. So I make sure they're both looking at that table as a guide as we're going through this. And then I'll just say something like, all right, whoever the complainer is, you're off the hot seat. You've done your part. Now we're going to shift over to partner B.
Okay.
Now we're picking up the listener steps.
All right.
Mm. Yeah.
Nice. So what is this table? What does that mean?
The table in the article is just a table outlining the four complainer steps and the five listener steps. So it's really cool for people to look at it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. So definitely go download that, folks. We'll link that in the show notes so you can have a visual as you're walking through this with your spouse. Let's shift over to those steps for the listener.
And we'll get right back to the interview. But what we want to do is make you aware that we have a resource around this whole subject of talking with your kids about sexuality. It's called Having the Talks.
And in Having the Talks, we address things like homosexuality, transgenderism, but even just the basics of sexuality, like anatomy and identity. We start the whole deck off with identity, and it's a resource for parents and children to play together. You could play it like a game, and it helps children as young as age 3 all the way up to teenhood. There's really two decks in one, because we have questions for younger children, and on the other side of the card, it's a question, same question, but for older children.
Yes, and this deck is designed to really bring these subjects up organically so that you can really have this discussion with them and open a safe place for you to be an askable parent. So you could go to havingthetalks.com and get your deck. And it will actually reroute you to Amazon, and you can get it tomorrow.
Next day shipping.
Yeah, if you ordered it today.
All right, link in the show notes. Back to the interview.
Sure. Yeah, so the first step of the listener is you're just going to summarize the complaint.
Okay.
And so you're not agreeing with the complaint. You're not empathizing. You're not apologizing right here. All you're doing is summarizing for a couple of reasons. One is your partner may not have said what they're really trying to say.
Hmm.
So if you summarize it, it gives them a chance to hear themselves back to clarify if that's not really what they were meaning.
Nice.
It also demonstrates you heard them.
Mm-hmm.
And it demonstrates and makes sure that we are hearing them. Because obviously when you hear your partner, we have all sorts of our own interpretations and tapes on. And often we get off track with what we think they're saying.
Mm. Yeah.
So it's just a simple summary where you say, so what I hear you saying is you think there's a pattern of X, makes you feel Y, and it taps into your core need for Z. Is that right?
Excellent.
Good.
So that's the summary.
And just to clarify, we're only reflecting back that last step.
Correct.
That you, not the whole thing that they just know.
Okay. Yeah, just the last step.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Okay, good. So that's the first step.
That's the first step. And within that step, there's a part two within number one. And that this next one is part of number one. It's a silent step. And I call this the 50% rule. And this is the most important part of the whole thing.
Okay.
And so what the 50% rule says is this complaint I just heard from my partner, I am not expected to take full ownership of that complaint because of everything they've already acknowledged. Because of my past, because of my circumstances, because of stuff they're doing, because of their past, because of all those variables, it's clear that this is not all my fault.
Good. Mm. Yep.
And however, I probably also can't say none of this is my fault.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
So the 50% rule just says, as a listener, you are in control to discern what piece of this am I guilty of? What part of the complaint? And do I know in my heart of hearts, yeah, that's, I can improve on that. Okay.
So it's a silent step because they're not going to jump in and be like, I'm not going to own that part because you blah, 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 blah.
Yes.
And that's definitely not me. And that's definitely not me.
That's right. So sometimes it might be, you know, I think 10% of this I am guilty of. Sometimes it might be 50%. Sometimes it might be 90%. Mm-hmm. But you don't say those percentages out loud. You just do that in your head.
Got it. That's good.
I could see how that would be another fight. Yeah, 5% maybe.
That's right.
All right.
Yeah.
So that's step one for the listener. Though. Yeah.
I like that because that's generally what's missed when couples are communicating back and forth, like, hey, I have this problem, and it's nobody's ever catching the ball, nobody's ever taking responsibility for any of it. So it's like, it's all you, you know,
that's
like,
right,
it's just going back and forth.
That's right.
So this kind of forces that like introspection of, hey, okay, this little bit, definitely I can own that.
And that's the antidote for defensiveness, right?
That's
just owning a sliver. So whatever that sliver is.
Correct. And the defensiveness comes out of feeling the pressure of, I'm expected to own all this complaint.
Yes.
Right.
And I disagree, so I'm going to own none of it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So the 50% rule eliminates that.
Yeah. There's a lot of freedom there to just acknowledge freedom. A piece, a part.
That's right.
Yeah.
And it's up to you to decide what that part is.
Yeah. That's good.
That is very good.
So that was step two. Yeah. So summarize step one.
Yeah. So step one is the summary and the 50% rule.
Okay.
And then that conviction of like what your part is, sometimes it comes to us right away and you can kind of feel it. It's like a prick on your conscience. Like, I know what it is.
Sure.
Other times you might have to mull it over to and kind of take your time to sift through it and to really figure out what is my part.
Yeah.
So that's going to look different, you know, each time you do it. But once you come to that, once you feel that conviction of what your piece is, no matter how big or small, you go to number two. And number two is an ownership statement.
Okay.
So all you say with number two is, I own that I have a tendency to do X.
Nice.
And that's all you say. You don't say, if you add in why you do it, that's defensiveness. So you don't add that. So it's just an ownership statement. I own that I have a tendency to do X.
How often do you have to jump in on that? Like, nope, stop. That's it.
Not as often as you would think, but I would say about 30% of the time.
Okay.
Yeah. Right.
Yep.
Yep.
Nice.
So that's ownership.
Okay.
And then as we go through these listener steps, I encourage the listener to just allow for a moment of silence in between each listener step, because it's very powerful what these listener steps are. And your partner has probably never heard you talk like this.
Mm-hmm.
And so just like in piano music where they have a rest note for effect, when you observe a moment of silence in between the listener steps, it just makes it feel more authentic, more genuine, and it sinks in a little deeper.
Yeah, for sure. That's good.
Now,
is the complainer responding to any of this?
No.
Okay.
No. Yeah, they're just taking it in because they're like, this is awesome. This is what they want.
Yeah.
Right.
Good.
So number three is empathy. And so owning the part that you know you can improve in is very important, because the rest of the steps don't work unless you've really latched on the part to the part that you know you can improve in.
Okay.
Otherwise, the rest of this is all lip service and it's inauthentic.
Yeah. Right.
So you really have to spend some time on that ownership part to make sure it's something the person is really understanding and they feel that that conviction and they really own that part, no matter how big or small. That's really
That's good.
Yeah. So then you go to number three. Number three is empathy. So just a basic empathy phrase. So it's, I can see how my tendency to do X would make you feel Y.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. And that's it. And a moment of silence. And then we go to number four, which is the apology. I want you to know I'm really sorry that my tendency to do X makes you feel Y.
That's good.
And a moment of
silence. Can you clarify for the the apology part? Is, are you apologizing for their feeling? Or are you apologizing for your tendency?
You're apologizing for the piece that you're owning, how that impacts your partner.
Okay. So it's kind of both, but starting with the domino effect of my tendency does this to you.
And it affects you in this way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
And again, that's why it only works if it comes back to the piece you're really owning.
Yeah.
Mm. Right? So you're not owning all of it. You're not saying this is all my fault. But what you are saying is, I own, or I'm really sorry that my tendency to do X, which is the part I'm owning, makes you feel Y.
And does it also work when it's not a pattern, but it's an event? Like I own that when I did blank, it made you feel blank.
Yes.
Okay.
That's right. So every time I'm saying pattern, you know, you can just swap it out with the event if that's what we're talking about.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is good. So, and is that where it ends, that step four?
There's one more.
Okay.
Yep. Step five is making amends. And so the best way to say sorry is change behavior. Mm-hmm. And however, it's about progress, not perfection, right? It's going to take time. So what you do as the listener with number five is, okay, so this piece I'm owning, what are some changes that I can make moving forward that are also going to work for me? Because I can't just bend over backwards with what my partner wants here because it's not going to be sustainable.
Yeah.
So I have to think of a win-win. Like, what are some adjustments? What are some, you know, some changes? What are some things I can do different moving forward? All centered around the part I'm owning. What are some things I can do different around that? That's also going to work for me, so it's sustainable.
Okay.
There's no right. There's no right or wrong here. It's just like a brainstorming, but it starts with the listener. Brainstorming what they could do different based on the piece they're owning.
Okay. If
they throw out those ideas, maybe they have two or three ideas, and then they're also going to ask their partner, what do you think of those ideas? And what else would you prefer?
Okay. Mm. So then they engage in this brainstorm process together.
Correct. Correct. Yep. And then whatever ideas are kind of like the best ideas that come out of that brainstorming, the listener, I always encourage the listener to just pull out their phone and under the notes section, create a list of your main takeaways. Like, what are your main takeaways that you're committing to that you are really like open to that you think, okay, I can do that. Write those down. And then you want to review that list at least twice a week so you don't forget.
Yeah.
Because right now it's fresh on your mind, but in a few weeks it's going to get a little fuzzy and we're all prone to going back to our old patterns.
Totally.
So to ensure that behavioral change, you want to write it down, look at it on a regular basis until it becomes your new normal.
Nice. And then do they revisit it and check in later and say like, is this working or should we go back to the drawing board on the brainstorm and try another solution?
Absolutely. Yeah. So it's definitely a ongoing, you know, kind of like, let's check back in on that. You know, there's other tools that helps them kind of recheck in on those major areas.
Okay.
And every time a couple does a reunite tool, they add to that list of takeaways. And then ideally that list becomes something they look at on a regular basis again, so that they're internalizing those changes and not forgetting about them.
Nice.
Yeah. What about for those couples that you probably talk to that say something along the lines of, this just seems too scripted. This is not very organic. I just can't do something like this. It won't work for us.
Yeah.
That sort of thing.
Yeah. Couple thoughts. One is I say to them, you know, if you're able to talk through these hard topics without either of you getting defensive, without either of you getting critical, then you don't need the reunite tool.
And that's not most couples.
That's not most couples, right? Not most topics. Yeah. However, if you feel like, man, we can't even talk about that without one of us getting defensive or criticized, then this is in your best interest.
Yeah.
And it's like any other skill. And so think about learning karate or golf. in the beginning, it feels very unnatural, very awkward, very yep. forced. Mm-hmm. But after a while, it just becomes part of your natural flow.
Yes.
Right. And so the same thing with the Reunite tool. In the beginning, it's going to feel uncomfortable, awkward. Yep. But with time, it becomes just a natural way you talk through arguments.
Right. That's good.
And you're not necessarily saying anymore, I'm on step four.
Right. Correct.
It just yeah. happens. You know that you need empathy there, or you know you need to own it there.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
That's good.
So yeah, it's like, yeah, they might feel like it's scripted or elementary. I've heard that term too, or simple, too easy. But like, is what you're doing working right now?
That's right.
And oftentimes that's why they're coming to you or listening and downloading the tools, because what they're doing isn't really working.
Correct.
So let's try this new clunky scripted thing.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Yeah. And I think the person who struggles the most just with tools in general for marriage is the person who has the temperament where they like to be more organic and free flowing, and they don't want to feel confined. And so, but of course, yes, what you said is a great thing to say to them. Like, well, how does that approach work for you?
Yeah.
Like, is it getting you the results that you desire with your partner when you have a hurt that you want to talk about?
Right.
And if it doesn't, you might have to consider this other approach, even though it's a little uncomfortable, but it's going to yield so much better results, which is ultimately what you're after.
That's it.
Yeah. And I also like to encourage people with the idea that like, this is an agreed upon system. So both of you can like look at the steps and agree upon like, hey, these are the boundaries to this conversation. It doesn't involve yelling or name calling or any of these other things that may sometimes creep in. This can create a barrier with that is safety.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so that you know that one person can be heard, the other person is going to feel pretty understood.
Yes.
That's right. Yeah, because a lot of people will avoid conflict because they're like, I don't want to get attacked. Like, you're going to blow up and I'm not going to do that. Now I'm avoiding it. Mm-hmm. And now there's no resolution, but this kind of approach, the Reunite tool, does create safety where they know like, okay, well, as long as you promise to follow this, I'm willing to talk about that topic.
Nice.
Yes. This is such a good conflict resolution tool. So if anybody's listening and they are needing to work in this area of their marriage, sit down, write the steps out, or go get online and look up the Reunite tool and use this.
Love it. We're going to link that in the show notes. Are there any other resources that you would recommend to our listeners who need to work through some resentment?
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, working with a marriage counselor or a relationship coach is always helpful. Getting tools such as the Reunite tool can be really helpful. Mm-hmm. And really, I think just buying into this idea that marriage does require effort.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of people have this Hollywood mentality that, you know, it should be summer nonstop and things should be amazing nonstop. And unfortunately, that's just not real life.
Yep.
Right.
And to remind yourself, how much time and money and energy have you put into your career to become successful?
Right.
Get trained at what you do versus how much have you invested in getting trained to be successful in your marriage?
Yeah.
And it pales in comparison. And so if you put in the work, you put in the effort, there can be great fruit on the other side.
Hear it, folks.
Yes. Where can people find you?
Yeah, the best place is probably my podcast, the Dr. Wyatt Show podcast. I usually post once a week and, you know, their episodes are pretty short, about 15 minutes. So everyone listening to this podcast, you know, since you already love podcasts, that's probably the best way is the Dr. Wyatt Show podcast.
Nice.
I'm also on Facebook and Instagram and TikTok. My handle is marriage_Dr. Wyatt.
Awesome.
Awesome.
All right. We'll put all that in the show notes so folks can go follow up and connect with you. We're going to close out this episode the way that we close out all of our episodes, and that's by asking you this question. Rewind back to your first couple years of marriage, and what advice do you wish you would have received? Fill in the blank, dear young married couple.
Dear young married couple, do not let patterns that are problematic just coast in your relationship. Most couples wait 4 to 7 years after problems begin before they reach out for help.
Yeah.
By the time that happens, problems are very entrenched and one person already has one foot out the door. So the moment you start noticing issues and problems and you're at an impasse, start reaching out for help, mm-hmm. whether it's a podcast or it's a conference or it's a book or it's a counselor. But there's so many resources in this day and age at our fingertips. So access them and don't let problems just coast, because they won't go away. They'll get worse.
Mm. Beautiful.
Well said. Thank you so much, Dr. Wyatt, for your time
Thank
and your wisdom.
You. You were fantastic.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for having me.
All right, friends. We really hope that you got a ton out of today's conversation. And if you want help, if you want personal guidance with individual counseling or couples counseling, or even help with you as a couple reaching the goals you have, just reach out. Give us a call at 916-678-1797 or shoot us an email at hello@dearyoungmarriedcouple.com.
No matter where you are in the world or in your marriage, we can set up a counseling session with you and we can work toward progress. We also post marriage advice regularly on our Instagram, which is @dearyoungmarriedcouple. And we'd love for you to join us in conversation there. All right, see you next week.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.